Welcome to Ambit Energy's Ambitious 50, presented by Ambitious Radio. Whether you are a new marketing consultant, national consultant, or someone considering the Ambit opportunity, if you are looking to be motivated, inspired, and uncover what it takes to get to the next level, listening will be well worth the investment of your time. We have weekly engaging conversations with some of today's most influential Ambit leaders as they discuss their successes, failures, tipping points, and other priceless information that you can go apply immediately to your business after listening. Now, here's your host, Doug Parker.
All right, welcome back to Ambit Energy's Ambitious 50. And guys, this is an interview. Some of them I've worked hard on and some of them I've worked really hard on, but this man is so busy, got so much going on. He's an executive consultant, $1 million income earner, top 30 income earner, been on multiple five-star trips, and by the time this airs, they will be just getting back from the most recent Maui trip. Help me welcome Richard Amueto. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Doug. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, I'll tell you, man, I appreciate you carving out some time. I know how busy you are with everything, and over the years, I appreciate the investment you've made in me. Some of the guests we have, I haven't been able to spend quite as much time with, but I've gotten to work with you, you know, firsthand, you and Mary both, and it's been quite a learning experience. I learn stuff from you guys every single day, and it's just great to be able to team up with folks and really have you guys invest in me and mature me. And I'm in the business, and I'm so appreciative of, you know, you sharing this information in a format that we can share with other people as they come in. It makes such a difference. We get lots of great comments with new consultants and existing consultants about how much they've learned. So I'd love to just jump in and tell us just a little bit about Richard Amueto. You know, a lot of people see him. They see how many things that you do and how you can do your nunchucks and all that kind of stuff. But tell us about Richard, where you grew up, and a little bit about yourself.
You know, I was born in Brooklyn, New York. It's where my mom was born and raised. My dad had moved from Argentina when he was 17 years old to Brooklyn, moved into the apartment building next door to my grandmother's house where my mom grew up. So literally my mom married the boy next door. You know, I was born in 70. When it was about time for me to start attending elementary school, there was just some stuff that was happening even at the elementary school level in Brooklyn. My parents were just like, no way, we're getting you out of here. You're not going to school there. Well, funny story was one of my mom's friends had come down to Texas and just ooh and awed about, you know, oh, you got to come to this great state and check it out. And so my dad literally got in his car, drove down to Texas. He was gone a week. And by the time he came back, he said, okay, I got us an apartment, I got a job, and we're moving in a few days. And literally we left Brooklyn. And that was where all my cousins and aunts, uncles, everyone was there. The whole family lived in Brooklyn or really close to Brooklyn. And I grew up in Carrollton, Texas. At that time, Carrollton, Texas was a upcoming blue collar town. And, that's kind of where my story started there. And I loved growing up in Carrollton, loved my childhood. I at some point in time after my dad had started a furniture store, we got a little bit more money and had an opportunity to move to North Dallas and it was right on the edge, like literally one street over, I would still be in Carrollton, but I happened to be on the cutting edge of an expanding ISD for Plano. So literally I was the furthest house away from my school. I mean, it took us probably an hour and a half to get to school every day by bus, and started attending Plano schools and, you know, finished out there. But, you know, after school, I hadn't really planned much on college, and I thought I was going into the family business. And that was during the time where my first big economic downturn that I experienced that I can remember was Black Monday in 1987. And at that time, banks started to get a little bit more aggressive on the loans they had out. It had a savings and loan scandal, and the business was just depleting. It was just falling apart. So quickly, I had to figure out how I was going to get to go to school, because I hadn't planned on it. And tried college for a little bit, went to Stephen F. Austin for a semester. That didn't work out. I was working on computers older than when I had at my house. And went to DeVry for a couple of trimesters in their business school. But I started a business. I started a lawn care company, and, you know, I had employees. I was 18, 19 years old, and I had to make a choice, go to school or grow my business, because I couldn't do both. And that was kind of my journey on kind of cutting my teeth on being responsible for creating my own revenue versus living off mom and dad.
You know, you talk about you couldn't, you know, work and go to school at the same time. And, you know, what a different world, you know, we live in nowadays. It's so interesting with our kids. And, you know, it's weird. Maybe you can share a little bit on with this. So, you know, I know that, you know, your growing up wasn't necessarily the easiest. I know mine wasn't the easiest, and I never had to worry about food or anything, but or clothing, anything like that, which some people do. But it wasn't like I was this, you know, silver spoon-fed kid. But we want to do so much for our kids, and we don't want them to struggle in some of the same ways that we did. But, you know, doesn't it really make you appreciate some of the struggles, make you appreciate the good times? I mean, with kids, how do you reconcile that and figure out how to do what and how not to do what for the kids and give them enough pain so they can grow up and not be a weakling, but then give them better opportunities?
You know, I guess it's hard because, you know, I never wanted for much. I always appreciated what I had. I wasn't materially spoiled, but I did, you know, I did work hard. I, you know, whether it was chores, I worked in the furniture store from the time I was 7. I was building furniture with a drill. And when I got old enough, I could go on the trucks and go do deliveries. And then I got to the point to where I was selling on the showroom floor at 15 when my friends were working at Burger King and Grandy's. So, you know, you try to figure out how do you instill that in your kids. And, you know, it's tough nowadays. I don't think it's an easy task for any parent to do. It is day-to-day, hand-to-hand combat sometimes of just operating from a level of appreciation, because obviously I'm able to provide more for my kids now than my parents were. But the biggest thing that I'm able to provide, which I think probably shaped a lot of me back in my childhood, was, you know, I grew up on my own. I'm an only child. And, you know, I walked home from school. I fixed my snack, fixed my lunch, whatever. I got myself to school. I mean, I didn't see my parents till late in the evening. And if it was maybe 30, 45 minutes, that was about it. My kids, since I work from home, I mean, I'm with my kids all the time. They see me nonstop. So obviously I see more of what they're doing than what my parents saw me doing. And maybe there would have been more correction back then if they were, you know, able to have, you know, both sets of eyes on me. But with Mary and I working from home, you know, we see everything. And, you know, you just got to pick and choose sometimes what you're going to, you know, correct that day as far as trying to shape it for the future. You know, my big thing is, you know, with Vivian or Zachary, even Brittany, who's in college now, is, you know, your habits are going to shape your outcomes. There's no two ways about it. So whatever habit you have today that's not, you know, the sustainability of what that's going to produce, that's going to determine, you know, you're either going to get stuck with it or you're going to kill it today, one way or the other. But there's not much wiggle room. So we're constantly looking at the habits that are not going to serve them for what they say they want in their life. And, you know, I didn't have that voice in my life. So I think it'll be a while before my two youngest probably start to really appreciate that. I know Brittany has certainly gotten to the point to where she understands where, you know, we're on her side, and that we're able to see things a little bit more clear, a little bit differently than hers from experience and wisdom. So, and maybe a little bit more discernment. So that's the thing, is really trying to address those habits that are going to create the future that they're looking for, that they're wanting.
Man, that was powerful. Your habits are going to shape your outcome. And there's no question about that. Whether they're good or they're bad habits, they're going to shape your outcome for sure. So let's talk about, you know, kind of the transition. You know, you jumped in to Ambit at some point. You're a successful business person. You talked a little bit about the landscaping business, and then I don't know if you talked about the mortgage business yet, but can you talk about that transition and how you went from being in those businesses to Ambit and what life was like before Ambit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I settled in with my landscape company. I'd taken on a partner who was really, really just fantastic at landscaping. And we started growing an incredible an incredible landscape construction company in Dallas. I mean, we took care of some of the highest net worth people in the area, and it was a great experience. But I'd gotten to the point where I was like, I don't know if I can do anything else. I mean, I've been doing that at that time before I got in the mortgage business, probably for 14 years, maybe 13 years. And that was my life. It was 6 days a week. That was my lifestyle. It was a lifestyle business. And, you know, my sister-in-law said, hey, listen, you know a bunch of people. How about you start, you know, kind of helping out and generate some loans, you know, I'll teach you some of the basics. We'll get you licensed. And I was like, all right, that sounds fun. I mean, I'll try it. And I started making more money doing mortgages, working less time than I was from my company that I had built over the past 13 some odd years. So I started spending less and less time on a landscape company. It was still going and growing. I was in the backs, you know, in the background handling the accounting and, you know, billing and receivables and stuff like that. But the mortgage business started to grow and I liked it. Certainly in the beginning. So I ended up having one office, then two offices, then inherited a third office and inherited a fourth office, all in different states. And now life got crazy because now it was 60, 70, sometimes 80 hours a week when you factor in the travel for me and Mary, and we had two small kids still at that time. So it got pretty crazy. And, you know, Mary got to the point to where she said, listen, I want out of the mortgage business. And I was like, I didn't have a solution. I didn't have like something sitting in my back pocket. Now, keep in mind, I still had the landscape company as well. And while I was running the mortgage company, I started a private lending group, which was doing private financing for non-bankable transactions, you know, for real estate investors, things that needed to be funded in, you know, 48 to 72 hours. Otherwise, they were going to lose the deal. And, you know, I just... every time there was an opportunity for me to learn something new to kind of increase my ability to make money is what I was doing. While I was doing that, I had no idea I was getting cooked like a frog, meaning, you know, I was in the cold water and it started to get warmed up. I swam a little slower. Then it got boiling and I was cooked because now I was just had so many things going. No quality of life. Money was great. No quality of life. That was not what I was looking for, you know, being in business. And long story short, I guess, is we met a good friend of ours in the mortgage business, John. And John, we'd had dinner with John probably for a year and a half, every Thursday night. And he started talking to us about Ambit. And I knew nothing about Jerry Thompson Jr. I knew nothing about deregulation. And I was like, you know what? That just sounds like a whole lot of, you know, mystery for me that I can't just jump right into it. And he was very persistent, and I just got to the point to where after he said, listen, there's a guy in your office, could we talk to him? And we made the introduction, and John had come back to us and said, hey, listen, he's going to get started. Do you want us to make all the money, or do you want to make some of the money? And I looked at Mary, and I said, I didn't really look at it. I looked at her after I put the credit card down. And she said, do you know how much this costs? I said, no. She goes, do you know anything about this? I said, not much. She says, why are you doing this? And I said, because I trust John. It was really one of the first experiences I had where somebody went out and did work for me and then came back and said, hey, do you want to get paid? And I figured if I could do that once with John, maybe I could do that twice with John. I don't know where John would stop doing that, but I figured as long as I could keep on, you know, introducing John to people, then we'd be able to get started and maybe build a business. And had no intentions whatsoever, not even had the vaguest thought whatsoever that this was going to be the solution out of the mortgage business. But 10 months in Ambit, we were scraping the signs off four different offices. And that was the end game. And we went full time with Ambit at that point.
So one thing I want to kind of touch on there, because we all know, you know, we've got like Ray Monty and the EC Factory, and he's cranking out all these executive consultants, and, you know, you find people that are business-minded and money-motivated. However, you know, if everything had been going perfectly, and they were going pretty well. I mean, I'm quite sure you were very successful in the mortgage business. You were successful in your landscaping business. And, you know, it's sometimes difficult to go to someone like that, I have found, or maybe I'm just thinking this way, that, you know, hey, you get a couple customers, you get $100. Well, if a guy's making 10, 12, 15, 20 grand a month, sometimes that's not that appealing. But circumstances sometimes line up, and persistence. You know, John stayed in touch with you and kind of did the, hey, do you want to make some of this money, or do you want us to make all the money kind of a deal, and helped you out. And worked your list. I know Kirk Horan, he talked about someone that was a race car driver that ultimately allowed him to kind of work through his list in his office because he did some of the heavy lifting. And I just want to highlight those things, guys, because, you know, a mutual contact or a friend of ours, Jared Abshire, executive consultant Jared Abshire, he says, hey, this is not this is network marketing. It's not no-work marketing, right? So, you know, the reality is you got to go out there and do a little bit of work. But can you talk about that transition? Because obviously you guys were working and doing well in the mortgage business, but a few things happened that caused you to go ahead and pull the trigger and really get serious about Ambit. Kind of what was that tipping point, and what made you decide to go ahead and jump into it with both feet?
You know, there's a couple little, like, you know, moments of truth, and it was over a period of months. The first was getting the first residual check for $12, and that was one of them. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of interesting because I didn't have any residual coming in. And then, you know, the couple checks, you know, after that, it was up to 150 something. Then it got up to $334 a month, and, you know, that was a few thousand, you know, dollars a year. I mean, 4,000 some odd dollars a year, let's say. And, you know, I had rental properties that weren't netting me that. And I had a whole lot more liability on those rental properties than that residual check cost to get. You know, back then it was $460 to get started. So, you know, those moments of truth with the residual. But then obviously, you know, my wife really just being miserable in the mortgage business, wanting out. That's a big, you know, big motivation for a husband, I would think. And then the other is, you know, the mortgage industry was changing rapidly. It was before the crash, you know, April 07, you know, we watched some of the big banks go out of business. We started watching friends losing jobs and businesses. You know, the mortgage files were becoming just obscenely thick. You know, I mean, I wish I would have taken a picture of the first loan I did versus the last loan I did. I mean, it would probably be double to triple the size, the file, with all of the disclosures and everything. The liability was increasing. The stress was increasing. And it was, thank God for Mary, just being so sick and tired and says, you know what, I'm gonna see what I can do with this. Because, you know, I don't know what it is. I'm going to go look for a job back in engineering, or we're going to start another business. But in the meantime, I'm going to play with this Ambit thing, and you figure out how to close us out of this. And that's kind of how that conversation went. It was very, you know, amicable. We weren't fighting about it. It was just like, this is what we got to do. And, you know, she got us promoted to regional. She got us promoted to senior very quickly. And at senior is where I really started to step in. And very fortunate that we brought in some really great people that had experience. They had some pain in their life too, you know. So I think part of what I think you're alluding to a little bit, and if I look at a lot of the top income earners in Ambit, and there's people that, you know, haven't become top income earners yet, but I know they're on their way, is there was a little bit of pain. This wasn't just a good idea. There was a real need to apply a solution to this pain. And it wasn't like life was horrible, but life wasn't what I wanted it. I wanted a vehicle. I wanted a platform. I wanted to be able to do a business from anywhere. And, you know, that was something I talked about even before I was in the mortgage business. I want to be able to, I don't want to be tied to geography. I don't want to be trapped by having to have a brick and mortar. And, you know, that was 10 years before I ever got started in Ambit. So it started to look like this might be it, you know. So, you know, we were 4 months into our senior business, and we shut down those offices, and we went full time with Ambit. New York opened up. One guy said yes, one guy said no. I went to go work with the guy that said yes, and we went to work. And when we went to work, we went up to New York. We drove up there. You know, one, we were trying to save on airfare. We stayed in hostels, you know, not like the nice hotels, not, no 3 stars. You know, we were like 2 stars or, you know, a little less. And, you know, we worked 8 till faint and we stayed up there a week and we built and we came back home. And 2 weeks later, we went right back up there, drove up there, did the same exact thing all over again. You know, but it was the work that we did in between those trips too, over the phone, that really got that team, you know, thriving and pumping and moving. And, you know, fortunately that, you know, a large portion of that group came down to Ambition that year, which was the first Ambition in Bastrop. And we were just, I mean, we were cruising. We were definitely sailing along. It was very good to get away from the pain.
Absolutely. And that was kind of what I was talking about, because, you know, the reality is we all want business minded people, you know, that get business in our business. However, you know, you either might feel intimidated to go after someone because you think, well, they're doing so well and this, that, and the other, or it may be that you go to them and they are doing that well and they're not being vulnerable or transparent with you, which they may not, depending on your relationship. And they just tell you, hey, I'm doing well, I'm not interested. But sometimes things line up into a situation where they come back to you, say, hey, tell me a little bit more about that again. And I just want to make sure that the listeners are aware of that, because, you know, if John hadn't been persistent and asked, well, hey, can you introduce me, or hey, you've got your guy here, and just kind of been persistent, you know, my life would be totally different. Jared Abshire's life would be totally different. You know, without Ambit Energy, it would be a totally different world for us. And the spider web of connections of how everybody is interlinked is really crazy. But it all started with somebody just asking and staying, you know, persistent and consistent with you through that process. So, you know, if you're listening today and you've been reluctant to reach out to a business leader because you feel like that, well, I don't know, do it. If you feel like that you've already presented to them and they've told you no and they've slammed the door in your face, hey, just stay in touch with them. You never know when the doors will get opened up. And Richard and Mary, they weren't looking for this opportunity, and they signed up and didn't even do a whole lot in the very beginning. Now they're $1 million income earners. They're top, you know, top 30 income earners. They're just leaders of all leaders. And it's because it was right place, right time, doing the right thing, and then went to work. And it's just real, really, you know, important that you stay in touch with the people that you kind of present information to. So, Richard, let's talk about that a little bit. So whenever you're talking to potentially a new consultant, maybe somebody you're going to sponsor and you've bumped into them or you're wanting to sponsor, kind of give me a 15-20 second kind of introduction. What does your invitation look like?
Invitation for someone to look at the business?
Sure. Yes, sir.
You know, it's the same one I've used forever. I mean, there's really two that I use the same. One is, I do ask people, listen, are you open to looking at additional streams of income? Are you open to looking at new ways of making money? Those are really direct, straightforward. I would say that more often than not, I will ask people to say, listen, I'm working on something new. I'd like to show you what I'm working on. It may or may not be of interest to you, but it might be of interest to somebody you know. And I think that's, you know, that last one is something you can use quite often, especially with someone that you might be a little bit intimidated by. You might be on, you know, they might be on your chicken list, because your job is to show the business, show the plan. And, you know, we're okay getting referrals. I mean, you know, John was okay getting a referral. So, you know, I think you got to be able to be willing just to, whatever you got to do that you're comfortable with, getting that information in front of them, so then the wheels can start to kind of click for them. Then that's your job, is to get that information in front of them.
Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. Now, what would you say is one of the personal habits that's contributed most to your success?
Personal habits. You know, I am, you know, I'm fairly driven. That doesn't mean I like to work 100 hours a week, but I mean, it's goals for me. It's setting goals. I have always set goals from the time that I was, you know, in karate, starting as a, I was in 13 when I started in karate, and, you know, there were always goals that I was putting on myself. Everything I've done has been self-imposed. I haven't had anyone telling me, hey, listen, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. It's always been self-imposed, and then going out looking for the resources that I need to achieve those goals. Because sometimes I might pick something, you know, where I don't have any experience in the area whatsoever, but I'm willing to go do the work to do the research so I can prepare myself to go achieve that. So maybe the big habit there is I'm big on preparation.
Well, you know, preparation is kind of funny. My stepdad was a painter, and, you know, it was always crazy. I hated prep work, man. I hated sanding. I hated scraping. I hated cleaning everything up to make – you know, it's like the painting is the fun thing, and it takes, like, no time to paint. That's the fun stuff. But it's always the preparation. If you do the prep work right, it'll take you three or four times as long as it actually does to do the painting. But if you don't do the prep work right, the painting, the finished product will fall apart eventually. And that preparation makes a huge, huge difference. So let's talk a little bit about kind of your why. You've talked about what it was, you know, a little bit before, but right now, today, what is your why as we speak today? Why you get up and continue to do what you do? Because you're a pretty conservative guy, and you've got pretty good residual money coming in, I would say. You don't have to do what you do every day. You don't have to pour into people like you do. But what keeps you going, and what's your and Mary's why?
Well, Mary and I have probably, you know, different whys. You know, I say probably we do. You know, there is, the first thing that I get out of bed for is really, God, who can I go help today? I mean, that's really one of my first thoughts in the morning, probably before my feet hit the ground. And because that's what's driving me. I'm going to get paid whether I go do another day of work or not. So it can't be about me. It's got to be about somebody else. You know, I've got a living room wall that's dedicated to four people that are getting promoted to executive consultant. We're, you know, basically created a whole display. And, you know, we look at those names. We look at the big name. We look at the leaders. Then we look at the next level of leaders. And then we look at the brand new marketing consultants that are. So you got hundreds of people on this wall and looking to see who can go help. Now, then you've got the other people that are not on that wall yet. So there's a lot of people to help. Now, not everyone wants the help. So my job really is to find out who wants that help, who really is trying to get to that next level. So for me, it is about helping people. That does drive me. I mean, I have some bigger vision that are long-term goals. I've talked about I wanted to have a youth leadership camp that would start to instill some of those habits and leadership principles at an earlier age, you know, instead of having to wait till they get all messed up as adults and then have to, some of them make it to personal growth and some of them never do. So I just thought that would be a great idea to be able to start to instill those principles then. But I thought it would be good that I actually raised my kids and actually had three good examples of what that might look like. So there's some time on that, but that's going to take resources. That's going to take time. It's going to take land. It's going to take a number of things, other people. But at the end of the day, it's just who can I help today? Who can I contribute value to?
Man, that's great. That really is great. Now, let's talk about some of the memories. I mentioned you've been on some five-star trips and just a variety of things. But can you tell us about a few memories with Ambit that were created as being part of Ambit? It doesn't have to be on a five-star trip. It could be, you know, just bumping into somebody in the hallway somewhere. But can you talk a little bit about some of the memories that Ambit has created for you?
You know, one that really pops out first is I remember we got a phone call from Brian McClure, our number one income earner. And he said, hey, he goes, how would you like to go to Atlanta in 2 days to get interviewed by John Maxwell? And I was like, Mary, get on the computer. Let's go ahead and buy those tickets. And we got to go, you know, hanging out and spending time and getting interviewed with John Maxwell was certainly one of those big, big moments. You know, that was priceless, you know, to sit across the pub table from him and just say, just call me John. I'm your friend. And that was priceless. One of the other, I would say, was the first time that we got asked to be in the Success From Home magazine to be profiled. And that was a huge, huge honor, huge, you know, blessing and great memories for the kids, too. They, you know, how many, you know, I mean, granted, people get to do this, but I mean, how many kids get to go to Barnes & Noble and open up a magazine and see a picture of themselves in there? So that was really great for our kids. I mean, I think that might have been more priceless, the smiles on their face when they went to Barnes & Noble, than actually getting asked to be in the magazine. So Those are things that kind of stick out. We've spent some great quality time with Chris and Leslie and Jerry and Carolyn. So, you know, when you get to spend time with the executives, the co-founders of the company, and you get to really understand that they really are fighting the same fight you are. And, you know, they've got their tools, we've got our tools, and, you know, we got to work symbiotically together so we can achieve a common goal, which is to make this company the finest and most respected.
Now, you mentioned the John Maxwell interview, and now was that one that was featured in the 21 Irrefutable Laws?
Yeah, that's what it was. Sorry, I left the title out on that one.
Well, I didn't want to just skim by that. I've gone through and listened to that before, and I was pretty dang sure I'd heard you guys in there. But guys, this is where they were featured on John Maxwell's The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership in Ambit Energy. And those of you that know who John Maxwell is, he is probably the world renowned, the number one thought leader in the world. And has participated in a lot of different things with Ambit, not because he has to or because he needs a few extra bucks or whatever. It's because he believes in what we got going on. But he took his book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, and then kind of customized it to how it relates to Ambit Energy. So it's very powerful. And if you haven't listened to it, I highly encourage you to do that. But Richard's being a little humble there, but it is a phenomenal listen and stuff that is relevant to exactly what it is that we are doing in our business. And you can get it on the Power Zone where you buy those things, or at Ambition. I'm not sure where else you can get it, but definitely can get it from Ambit in the Power Zone. So anyway, with that being said, it is really great, great info. You know, when you're talking about you did the presentation and maybe you've done the invitation, you've done the presentation, now you get some objections. So a consultant maybe tells you, I want to think about it, Richard. You know, hey, thanks so much. Have a great day. What's the number one objection that you typically see from when you're talking to people about being a consultant?
I mean, nowadays with it being $100, usually money's not a factor. When it was $460, you know, you'd have to buy some weeks sometimes with people because they were in between paychecks, this, that, and the other. And oddly enough, still sometimes the $100, you know, catches people off guard, which I mean, I get it. I mean, people are working harder than they were 5 years ago, and they're making probably a little less money also. So it's, you know, times aren't that much better since the collapse. And, but it's going to be time. I think really, people just the way that they have life prioritized, sometimes they're just not willing to be interrupted, even if they are in a little bit of that discomfort or pain. And I think most Americans are probably, you know, with finances would honestly say, you know, we don't have a firm grip of our finances. You know, there's a lot of things that are in flux. You know, if the transmission goes out, if the dryer goes out, the fridge goes out, it's going to throw things out of whack for a lot of people. So it really comes down to time, and, you know, they do have that collapse. They just don't realize you're going to have to be willing to have some of your life interrupted if you want to fix or change what you got going on right now. And, you know, when time is a factor, I just, you know, when you look at this business, it only takes minutes a day to start to build. And then as they start to produce some success, you know, get some checks, or they get some consultants in their business and they can kind of see a little bit bigger, then we stretch that vision, and naturally they're just willing to put more time into the business. So I'm okay with someone having a time conversation, but if that's really what's going to keep them from starting the business, then they're not going to make it here. Hey, you got to be willing to be interrupted.
Hey, would you repeat that last thing you said maybe 30, 60 seconds ago? It's something about you got to be willing to disrupt or something in order to – I didn't pick it all up, but it was really good.
Just you got to be willing to be interrupted. I mean, your priorities, you're going to have to be willing to let your life, let your priorities get a little interrupted if you want to solve what it is that you're wanting to fix here. The fact of – time, if someone's really going to hang on to time being the main reason why they can't start, I don't know when more time shows up. unless you're willing to rearrange priorities, more time is not going to show up. And listen, I've got a list of people that said it was time, and their life is no different from 5 years ago than it is today. And so, but that was their choice. That's the habit they've got.
Man, that is powerful. You got to be willing to be interrupted. And, you know, we all have 168 hours in a week. You know, that's the great equalizer, no matter how smart you are or how much money you got. We all have the same amount of hours in a week. So that's great stuff. Now, I know that in the past, just because I know you personally, I know that you and Mary have done a lot of personal development. I think that's kind of how you guys met and those things. But can you talk about maybe who's someone that's made a huge impact on your life? And it can be ambit-related, or it could be somebody else. And then also kind of maybe who's mentoring you now and or who you're following now and how that's impacting what you've got going on.
So I think I've been fortunate that I've always had at least one or two people in my life that are taking an interest in me. And it probably goes back to when I was playing soccer as a kid. I had a coach that was very committed, you know, for me to get better and do things. And I started to experience that it was okay to have people contribute to you. And I think sometimes people have this guard up that's like, oh no, if you're starting to tell me, you know, something's wrong, then that's bad. I didn't have that experience. I was willing to be corrected. I mean, I didn't always take it well, but I was willing to be corrected. But I have a pseudo Uncle Phil. He's not an actual uncle, but I call him uncle because of who he is in my life. And, you know, he came in. He also got me into karate, and I still had lunch with him a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, he started giving me these little nuggets along the way. And, you know, I just remember him years ago. He, you know, probably 25, maybe I was right before my first kickboxing match. And he told me, he says, don't believe your own press. Never believe your own press. And he goes, because if you get good at this and you start winning, they're going to write stuff. You know, people are going to approach you. They're going to, you know, and I was like, okay. And I hung on to that. And so Uncle Phil is still in my life, and I get these nuggets from him from time to time. And it has served me in ambit to not believe my own press, to always act like I'm in the trenches just like everybody else, regardless of rank or accomplishments or whatever else. So then there's people in ambit, such as Brian McClure, Chris and Debbie Atkinson, Ray Monty. These are people that I go to, that I generate the call and say, hey, listen, this is what I'm struggling with, or hey, I need to bounce this off you, make sure I don't go the wrong direction with this. I want to, especially if you're, you know, trying to do something new with the team, let's say, and you just want to get some feedback. Have you ever done something like this? So I do submit myself to being transparent with those guys so they can say, hey, that's not going to work, or hey, that's a horrible idea, or yeah, we tried that, you know, had great response. Let me know how we can help. So those are, you know, some main people in ambit. But, you know, I'm always constantly resourcing myself with books, courses. I mean, Mary's one of my best coaches. I mean, Mary's voice is only second to God's voice in my life. So she's got a great discernment, and I do give her permission to point things out. And it's a real priceless situation when you've got a husband and wife that actually are able to correct each other or point things out and not have an offense occur. So,
man, that is a good one. I don't know how you guys do it. I mean, seriously, commend you on that, because it's tough. I mean, for whatever reason, I can take criticism from a lot of people, but honestly, with my wife, and we've got a pretty good relationship, you know, over two decades we've been married. But that was, I mean, I wrote that down, permission to point things out. And then you kind of followed it up without there, you know, being, you know, I forgot what you said, aggravation or something. But
Offense,
man, because I get offended. And it's like this annoyance or this offended, like I'm like, I don't want to hear that. You know, I may not say that out loud, but I dang sure say it inside my head. And, man, that right there, that's worth the weight of gold. for this whole show for me, just hearing that one thing, because I know I got a smart wife. That's one of the things I love about her. But I do take offense, and I don't know that I'm really good about giving her permission to point things out. I'm like, no, I don't want to hear that. So anyway, that's a cool thing that you guys have, and I see you guys obviously working together, you know, and living together and doing all the things that you guys do together. And it's cool seeing your interactions. So what an accomplishment you guys have there. That's pretty cool stuff. So, you know, we're getting near the end of the show, but I do want to ask you just a couple of other questions. And you know, we got as much time as you want, but can you talk about one of the things that's been one of the most frustrating times with Ambit? And the reason why I want to talk about that is absolutely in no way to try to get dirt on Ambit or say something bad about Ambit, but it's because as Ambit consultants, we're going to go through frustrating times. And if we always paint this pretty picture of all these $1 million income earners, and then somebody goes through some hard times and they're like, man, this is not what I signed up for, and then they quit, that's not good. I want to make sure that people know that you're going to have hard times. There's no question about it, but here's how you persevere through it. So can you tell us about one of the most difficult times you've had with Ambit and then how you persevered through it?
So, you know, we're talking about 10 years, right? So, you know, there's been moments where, you know, Ambit's not immune from, you know, the energy industry, whether it's the prices going crazy and the market going crazy in 2008, whether it's the polar vortex that happened a few years ago. There's things that, you know, you got to develop a maturity in this business to where you have to understand that things are going to happen. And, you know, Chris and Jerry, you know, when they went through that 2008 experience, you know, there was nothing that they could have prepared for to deal with what was going to happen in 2008 with the, you know, prices of everything going crazy, the, you know, stock market crashing, everything that was just causing crunching down on various industries. And there certainly was no level of preparation they could have had for the polar vortex or opening a market and the market got delayed. I mean, this is such a new industry. There's nothing that they've done prior to this that prepares them 100% for everything that's going to come down the road with building this business. So for me, it's been a process over the years to get to the point to understand that they're fighting the same fight. And so the seasons that I've gone through is really when I thought corporate should have been handling it differently. Like I have some kind of say-so in that, right? I'm not corporate. I'm an independent contractor, just like everybody else. But I, you know, heard something from somebody a long time ago, and they said, listen, pick the company you want to have problems with. You're gonna have problems in any business that you build. Pick the company you want to have problems with. And what that means is pick the company you know is going to be fighting for the solution. And they may not get it right the first time. They may not do it fast enough. But the fact of the matter is that they get it done, that's the important thing, because there's a lot of companies that don't ever get it right. There's a lot of companies that don't care what happens to your check, because they're so busy about feeding themselves at the top. They don't care. This company, this leadership team, this ownership cares. Legitimately, authentically cares about you and I's check. And I wish more people would stick around long enough to get that experience, because when they leave from here, they are going into the wild. They are going into the sea of where most companies don't care. They don't care how they handle it. They'll figure it out what's best for them, not what's best for you. And I think Ambit's done a great job at making it work for everybody.
Well, yeah, pick the company you want to have problems with. So, you know, obviously it's no different than a marriage or any other relationship. you know, you're going to have hard times. You're going to have problems. You're going to have great times. You're going to have some of the best times of your life. But pick the one that you want and then stick with it. And obviously, for probably the vast majority of the people listening to this show, you know, they've obviously picked Ambit. But there very well may be people that are listening to this show that are considering the opportunity. And if that's the case, guys, I mean, we're talking to you know, to Richard Amueto, a guy that's been with the company for, you know, right at a decade. And he's seen the good, the bad, the this side, that side, you know, the early mornings, the late nights. He's really seen a lot of those things. And it's you know, really the experience that the leaders have and the decisions they make, it really does make a huge difference. So kind of as we kind of wrap up, let's talk about new marketing consultants when they're coming in. I know that you have spent a lot of time on kind of a site to help people get up and running very quickly, being ambitquickstart.com, so it's very appropriately named. But in addition to that, are there any books that you recommend for maybe new marketing consultants or even just people in general that you really have gotten a lot out of and you think it'd be a great one for every person in a network marketing or in our business to read?
You know, I used to. I don't currently right now. Someone joining Ambit today, I would prefer that they follow the course of action and get promoted to regional consultant as soon as possible. And I think at that point in time, then there's probably enough things that have been figured out who you're working with as far as with your upline that they might be able to resource you for the things that you need to grow in beyond that. But I think that the plan of action for somebody joining today, given also that it's $100 to start your business, it needs to be head down, go to work. We've got the tools, we've got the videos, we've got everything that we need, at least to keep you busy enough for the first 30 days, you know? So I just think that we take a chance of confusing the new consultant with, plus here's the thing, most people don't like to read. I mean, you think about how many people read more than one book a year? Not many. You know, the percentage is pretty high. Maybe 5% read 2 or 3 books a year. And then the rest is nothing. I mean, they're just, yeah, they're reading Google, they're reading Facebook, they're reading whatever, but they're not reading books. They're not reading, you know, performance books. They're not reading, you know, personal growth. They're not reading leadership books. It's just not what they're doing. I mean, they get out of school and they're like, I don't want to read another book. So I laying a book on somebody after when they just come in, I would not do that. I think we made a mistake of doing that early on. I think there's some audio stuff that I like, you know, Darren Hardy's, which is, I just dropped my mind, first 7 days in network marketing. I think there's a lot of things because it talks about habits. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. But, you know, Eric Worre's got a great book, GoPro. And I really do. I mean, I think it's a great book. I wish I would have been introduced to that book. He hadn't written it yet in the early days, but certainly not in the very beginning. You know, at a regional or senior consultant, great. I think it'll give you a different perspective of some things of how to approach it, even though most everything that he built, I think, was mostly product-based until his maybe last company that he was a part of. But I think there's enough tools and resources, training videos, upline support, audio, that a new consultant is plenty resourced, you know, for the first 30 days and maybe first 60 or 90 days. So put your head down, get promoted to regional, get promoted to senior as quickly as possible, and then you can actually start making some checks that represent having a real business.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, and I'm glad that you've talked about that, because I know I hear you sometimes talk about speed over strategy. So put your head down, go to work, you know, and then, you know, get promoted to regional consultant, which, hey guys, that's not, you know, sometimes it can take some time to get there, but there are people that literally get promoted to regional consultant in, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 days, or, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. So it's not something that's insurmountable. That's pretty easy to do. And then, you know, some of the books like the GoPro, or, you know, then maybe dialing into the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership and Ambit Energy as supplemental It's not necessary to do those in order to become successful in Ambit, but I hadn't really had anybody really talk about that, Richard. I mean, they, you know, a lot of people talk about this book or that book, but I really appreciate the emphasis on just go to work and follow the plan initially and don't get sidetracked on doing a bunch of things, quote unquote, to prepare you for tomorrow that just slows down your progress to getting that first initial raise. Because one thing I found about this business is that it's all about getting promoted and helping other people get promoted. And if you can do enough of that, it all just kind of takes care of itself.
Absolutely.
Cool.
And well, listen, I love books. I'm in books all the time. You know, I've got a membership to audible.com. You know, I'm in an audio book. I do more audio than I do physical books, but I probably maybe 80% audio and 20%, you know, reading. And then if I really like an audiobook and I feel like there's content in there that I want to be able to go in there and really highlight and go back and reference from time to time, then I'll just buy the, you know, the paper copy of it or the hardback of it. So I've done that with a few different books, but I mean, I love causing myself to, you know, provoke my thinking, and that's, you know, that's how I focus on, you know, growing.
You know, as we kind of wrap up the show now, just talk about personally what you do to recharge. I know that you're a hard-hitting, real aggressive guy going out there making it happen. But what does an average day look like in the Almueto household for Richard? I know that you like to get up real early in the morning, right? But no, what does a day look like for you?
You know, if I'm working out at 8:30, I'm up at 8 o'clock. If I'm not, you know, I'm up around 9. Maybe 10. Usually I'm at the gym probably 3 times a week. Maybe doing that a little bit more when I come back from Maui and Destin. But I definitely, like to stay fit. But it's, you know what? My house is crazy. Me and Mary live here. Zachary, who's 8, lives here. Vivian is almost 12, lives here. My mom lives here. And it is Grand Central Station from the moment those kids wake up. And so we work from home. There is, now a new element where there's homeschooling being done in the house. But my kids are high energy, high strung, strong-willed. So, you know, it could be lightsaber duels, it could be air guns or whatever they're shooting, or Vivian doing some kind of craft that God only knows what chemicals or toxins are now. She's like my mad scientist. She sees something on YouTube and she starts creating concoctions. And I'm like, do you know what that's going to do? She's like, no. And I said, all right, close the door. I'm out of here. So basically, it is just our life. I mean, there's just a lot of crazy activity here. You know, I like to, you know, I get into my office, I go look to see who's new in the business and reach out to some of the leaders and start finding out what's going on. It's, for me, it's staying in touch, staying in communication, staying in relationship, seeing what I can do to take that relationship to the next level. Because I do know this, in your Ambit Energy career, it's going to happen once or more than once, is life is going to hit you. And if somebody doesn't feel like they have somebody they can reach out to, then what's going to happen is life's going to take them out of the game. Life's going to take them out of Ambit. And so what I want people to know is that, listen, you've got a resource. It's not just your Ambit upline. I don't mean like it's a counseling session, Dear Abby. I just mean that you've got people that are fighting for you, because one of the things that a national told me years ago is when you sponsor somebody, you don't just sponsor them into your business. You sponsor their whole life. Because chances are, when somebody gets in the business, other things are going to get revealed. You know, the transparency will start to unfold, so to speak, and you'll start to see more and more. And, you know, you'll start to hear about some of the financial issues or the marital issues or the kid issues or whatever. And I think it's important just to realize that it's all about relationships. So I'm building relationships on a daily basis with the team, outside the team. So I do spend a lot of time on the phone, obviously 3-way phone calls, introductory calls to new consultants. And you know, working closely with the ones that are close to promoting, like on a daily basis, if not 4 or 5 times a day with those people. And there's just it's high contact on the phone is what a lot of it is. And then obviously we've got our events and weekly meetings, and you know, I'm big on fellowship and big on, you know, bonding. So I think it's just really whatever I can do to kind of create a sandbox and a playground for people to build relationships is what my day looks like.
Cool. So really the very last thing is just kind of advice that you might give to kind of a 3 categories of individuals. It may be a prospective consultant that you've talked to them about the business and they kind of just, no matter what you say, they just say, hey, I want to think about it. So what advice would you leave with that person with?
Well, I want to get someone to the next exposure. You know, I always wonder, you know, when I think about something that I'm taking action on. If I'm not taking action on something, if like I have no intent or interest in taking action on something, I am not thinking about it. So when somebody says that to me, for me, it's like I do that thing like a dog does, you know, it goes, you know, you tilt the head and it's like, what does that mean? You're to think about it, because I don't really think thinking about it makes a difference one bit. Unless you're thinking about how am I going to implement this into my life, or, you know, I want to know more, I want to learn more. So, I mean, I obviously like to get some of the next exposure. So that might be the Success From Home magazine's great, and point out some articles in there, some profiles in there for them to pay attention to. I'm going to have maybe some of the press releases that are, you know, available there on your Ambit Energy site. I want to leave them with something to get them another exposure, but I don't want to leave that meeting without being able to set up when we're getting back together in the future. I don't want to leave a meeting without booking a meeting. And so that's really my point. Now, my end game as far as that is, I want to book a meeting from leaving a meeting. The other thing is, if I really want to test the waters, then I'll say, well, why don't we just do some work together without you risking anything, so I can show you how this works. And we can make phone calls to prospective customers, prospective consultants, because really I want to find out, is that really a maybe, you know, or are they just being nice? You know, I want to know, you got to test the limits to see where that really is, where that person really is, or are they just being nice? Because I want a yes, I want to know. And because I don't want to spend time thinking about or hoping about somebody coming in. I can always come back to them, even if they're a no. But I need to know right now so I'm not wasting my time, because I only have 168 hours this week.
Yeah, that's very, very powerful, you know, and that articulating it in that way. Because sometimes people tell you they want to think about it or whatever, and it sounds, you can tell that it's baloney. But you can't really just tell them that's baloney. So you got to have some kind of way to transition through that. And I like the way, I really do, I like the way that you explain that, to say people really don't think about it unless there's some kind of action steps. And, you know, maybe you're giving them something to think about, or schedule a follow-up, or there's something where, okay, well, you know, if you need, you know, a week to think about it, great, let's, you know, take a, you know, whatever amount of time, and then we'll schedule. So you want to talk, you know, next Thursday, about 5 o'clock, and then if they start crawfishing there, well, then it's like, well, what are you really thinking about for the next week? And maybe you can plant some stuff on them to have them think about. But I love that. Okay, so next question is that you've got a new marketing consultant. They've just joined within the past 7 to 10 days, and maybe they seem like they were on fire, man. I mean, they went through AmbitQuickStart.com. They did everything they were supposed to do, you know, within 24 hours. They seem like they're on fire. And then 7 to 10 days, it's like, wah, wah, wah. What do you tell someone like that? Maybe something hit them for a curveball. They read something on the internet, whatever.
The first question is, I ask them, what happened? You know, what changed? What changed your course of direction? So it really is a conversation. It could be a number of things. You know, I've, you know, had consultants join and, you know, something happened tragic in their family. They lost their job the next day. I mean, it's amazing. Life just goes on. So, I mean, the best thing is really to find out what happened. I mean, just, and if they're still committed to building the business. So I think that conversation can go a number of different ways. I don't write people off. I let them write themselves off. And I always say I'm the last one to quit. So I really, it's really just a matter of finding out what happened, what's going to be the new course of action. And I want to know, are you quitting? Because if you quit, I'm okay with that. You're not quitting on me. You're quitting on you. So I'm okay with that. I just need to know because I don't want to be hopeful and optimistic for something that's not reality. So it's just a couple of questions just to find out what happened and do they want to take new action? You know, they were ready to take some serious mentorship and grow this business because people are winning. People are making it happen. So why can't it happen for you? You just got to learn to do some things and just know you're going to get hit. And you're probably going to get hit more than you like, but the result is you win.
Man, that's really, really good stuff. So last thing, what do you think is next for Ambit Energy? I know you got a crystal ball, and it tells you all the right answers to everything. But, you know, it's been about 10 years. Or, you know, you've been in the business. You've been to many of the ambitions and simulcasts and just, you know, kind of what is your vision? What do you see over the next, you know, few years to a decade for Ambit Energy?
Man, I mean, obviously, you know, we've got more and more states to still deregulate. So, I mean, Ambit's just got so much room to grow. I mean, there's very few industries that really, I mean, we say it all the time, a window of opportunity. There's very few that have this kind of expanding window of opportunity. And so, you know, I see us in 30 states over the next 10 years. And I think we'll be in multiple countries before we're in all 30 states. I mean, I think we'll see countries in the next, I would say, 24 to 36 months. But these are all my personal opinion and predictions. I see Canada, I see UK, I see, you know, parts of Europe, you know, Australia, Japan deregulated in April of this year, of 2016. So, you know, I think there's real international opportunity. There's huge domestic opportunity to sit right here in our own backyard, whatever backyard you're sitting in. And then I see with the evolution, the involvement of energy deregulation, I think we're going to see more and more innovations. I mean, solar's just scratching just the surface, like scratching the surface of Jupiter or whatever. I mean, it's going to help. And it's great, and we'll have access to it, and we'll use it in all the states that we possibly can. And I hope it comes to Texas sometime soon. But I think we're just going to see things that haven't even been thought of yet that are really going to give Ambit an edge to serve its customers and grow this company to a $6 billion and then on to a $10 billion company. So obviously, domestic opportunity, huge. International opportunity, huge. Innovation opportunities, huger. So we just can't see. I mean, this is an industry that's been the same for 100 years, let's say, and, you know, we're only 10 years into deregulation, basically. And Ambit is the biggest, best to take advantage of the new opportunities that are going to come about because of deregulation.
Well, Richard, I just want to tell you thank you from the bottom of my heart for this interview, but in general, thank you for the last right at 3 years for, like I said, investing in me and in our business here, and just you know, being a mentor, always being available and helpful, and you know, hey, having those tough conversations, we need to have those. But I'm really, really appreciative of the relationship, and you know, it was pretty cool. I don't even remember when it was, but at some point in the last 6 months, you know, you texted me something, and it was something to the effect of, thank God for Ambit. And it was like you were being sincere. It wasn't like a flippant little comment. He goes, you know, you said if it wasn't for Ambit, we never would have met. And, you know, the reality is that it has brought us together, and there's so many cool relationships and stuff we have. So, man, I appreciate the time today and the last 3 years of relationship personally as well.
You bet. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show. Couldn't be more proud of, you know, what you've created here. I mean, I know there's so many Ambit consultants across the country that are blessed by this show that you've got. And then, you know, just the other things that you do in the Dallas market with, you know, making sure there's a weekly video out there for updating what's happening and in Ambit land, and then just all that you do as far as serving at meetings and training. So, I mean, just my hat's off to you on this, on putting this show. I mean, you've stayed consistent, persistent. You've gotten the leaders on it, because I know it's like herding cats sometimes, maybe kittens with some lions in there. I don't know. You know, we're all real nice, but we're sometimes hard to get to nail down.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been great. And you know, I assure you, there's no way I would have gotten to executive consultant without everybody pouring into me. I mean, I literally go back in and pick things out from the show that have helped, you know, put fuel on the fire of what I'm doing. And it keeps me motivated and engaged. And so it's been great. So thanks for everything you do. And guys, remember, you can make money or you can make excuses, but you cannot make both. So go out there and be ambitious.
You've been listening to Ambit Energy's Ambitious 50, presented by the Ambitious Radio Network and hosted by serial entrepreneur Doug Parker. Join us weekly as we have engaging conversations with Ambit leaders on topics that can be applied to your business immediately after listening. Like what you've heard? Listen to other interviews at ambitiousradio.com or subscribe on iTunes.